Hi, this is Mike Miller from WUTC Chattanooga. I'm calling because I'm supposed to be interviewing Ira Glass at 9:30, but I'm not getting an answer on the studio line. Oh, okay. This is Ira I'm talking to right now. Hi.
This is just a terrible phone connection.
You're listening to Around It About Chattanooga. I am Michael Edward Miller.
And I'm Garrett Crowe.
Garrett, I'm pretty excited. This is the episode where I interview Ira Glass, who is coming to Chattanooga April 7th for the George T. Hunter Lecture Series. He hosts This American Life, a weekly radio show. It comes from Chicago. More than 500 public radio stations air This American Life each week, including, of course, WUTC. Did you know it has 1.7 million listeners on the radio, and how many million more we don't even know on the podcast version of it?
Yeah, I didn't know that, but they deserve as much credit as they can get.
This American Life, in spite of it being so popular, it's a difficult show to just sum up or classify. How would you classify it?
I would call it storytelling at the most base form. You have storytellers from all over the world telling these sometimes fictional, sometimes non-fictional stories. You can't really classify it,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, and just where they record is so interesting sometimes. They've gone to a summer camp and done a whole episode just about being at camp.
It's a typical camp. All the normal activities.
Or the one that got me into This American Life, when they had a producer go into a prison and interview these inmates who were practicing for a play of Hamlet.
Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. A fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy.
Most readers with any cast are terrible. This one is terrible, too. The actors know it, but they plow on through the script. An inmate named Paul, who serves as Agnes's assistant director, explains why.
First two or three acts, I thought, oh, no, there's no way.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're a big fan of documentaries, and a lot of it is done very documentary style, but just on the radio, not in film.
And they have great production, great music.
I was really excited to talk to Ira Glass. It's been a big influence on me, This American Life, so let's just go ahead and get to it. Here's my interview with Ira Glass. Testing, testing. Testing, testing.
Hey, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Hold on. Okay. So I'm rolling, and then basically I'm recording my voice on one channel and the phone line on the other.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing.
Okay.
Ira Glass, welcome to Around It About Chattanooga.
Glad to be here.
I got into radio in no small part because I loved This American Life, you know, for years, just listening to it before I even started working here in radio. And is that something you hear fairly frequently, people telling you that?
No.
Really?
No. It's actually not so common. I mean, I hear that it is a phenomenon a little bit, but no. Like, I haven't had many people say to me, like, I got into radio because of you. No, I can't think of the last time anyone has said that to me at all. No, I hope you're feeling okay about that decision.
It's like when you read a really good short story, for example, you think, man, that was a great story. I bet I could write a story like that. When you hear a great story on This American Life, you think, you know, something like that happened to me and one of my friends one time. I'd like to work in radio and record those kind of stories and produce those kind of stories.
No, and it's funny because I learned to do the work I do from people who were doing stories like this before me, and I very much had that feeling. Like, I definitely heard other people's work and thought, like, oh, that doesn't seem so bad. I could do that. And yeah, I definitely relate to that.
You actually solicit stories through the This American Life website, and I'm sure when you meet random people, they're pitching story ideas to you. What are the elements of a successful story pitch for This American Life?
I mean, the most important thing is it has to be surprising. I mean, because most of the stories that we do are just stories about people's personal lives. And so for it to work, really surprising things have to happen. The plot has to be surprising. And then the person telling it has to be emotional. Like, some people, you know, like, they're not necessarily the most expressive tellers of their own story. And as the saying goes, great stories happen to those who can tell them. And then, you know, like, obviously we like stories that are funny and stories that are emotional and, you know, all that's important. But really, like, the most important thing is that the story is surprising and that it leads to some kind of, like, thought or picture of the world, or the person gets a new idea of something over the course of the story. I mean, that's, you know, that's what makes something a story, is that somebody changes or somebody learns something new.
You used to be a reporter. You used to work for NPR, but you said you weren't very good at it when you started. You said you were 19, but you didn't get competent in writing and structuring stories until you were 27. I guess my question to that is, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's recordings online, and if you want to go to the trouble, you could insert one here when you play this on the radio of me, you know, when I was 25 or 26, and I'm not good. Like, I could pause right now and you could play a little clip of that.
Mexico is now one of our biggest grain customers, buying $500 million to $1 billion worth every year, including corn to feed its people and sorghum to feed its livestock. This helps cut our own trade deficit.
And you know, it's not false modesty or something. Like, I was bad. And there were certain parts of it that I was always good at. And the one thing that I was always good at from the very beginning was I was always a very instinctive and very solid editor. And so I could take, you know, when I was working on the daily news shows or when I was working, I worked with a guy who produced documentaries, you know, I could take like an hour of material and very thoughtfully, like, say, like, here's the most interesting parts, here's the right order for them to go into, here's, you know, like, I structure always was, I was okay at, but actually, like, learning to be a reporter, learning to do an interview, learning to sound like myself on the air, learning to sound relaxed, learning to write for radio, all of that just took me years. It took a really long time. And it took me longer than anybody I've ever met in radio, is the truth. And maybe partly because I didn't necessarily want to sound like a traditional NPR reporter. Like, I thought that that sound seemed a little, like it lacked certain things that I've tried to do in stories that I'm making. But partly because I just was not any good. Like, I was really bad. And I remember my parents just being like, why are you doing this? Like, why don't you just go to medical school? And I just, I don't know. I just thought, like, I just saw something in it.
How did you get on the air? Because as someone who works for an NPR station now, I know they're really selective about what they let on the air now. Were they just, there was more time to fill in the 80s?
That's a really good question. I mean, I sounded enough like the other NPR reporters that I could pass. Like, I didn't sound like a good NPR reporter, but I sounded like, you know, you'll hear sometimes, you know, on the various news shows, you'll hear a story that's okay,
yeah,
done by somebody who's obviously a beginner, but, you know, they can, like, walk through their script and play the quotes and it's over in 3 minutes and you're done. Like, I was one of those people. Like, I was definitely one of those people.
You champion failure as an important part of the creative process. Why is failure important when you're being creative?
I mean, I think it's funny. I don't even think of it as the creative process, but I guess that is what I'm talking about. I mean, it's like, if you're making stuff, you want to be running at things that mean something to you and things that other people haven't tried and things that are new, right? Especially here in public radio. I mean, the whole mission of public radio is to do things that no one else is doing elsewhere in the media.
Right.
And so if that's your job, is to be inventing something new all the time and looking for new things to talk about and new ways to go at things, then necessarily you're going to be running at stuff and it's not going to work. And on our show, like, you know, like, we're as experienced as anybody, like, I and the producers put the show together. You know, I would say that for us to find 3 or 4 stories that we think are good enough to be on the air, we'll go through 15 or 20 stories and then we'll go into production on 6 or 7 or 8 of them. And we'll just run at stuff just to see, like, could this work? Could this work? Could this work? Could this work? And I feel like that's the only way to find something that's going to be exciting is to just, like, run at a bunch of stuff and then just kind of, like, know that something will probably come out of it that'll be pretty good. And I think that the only other system to sort of, like, running at a lot of stuff and anticipating that half of it's going to fail, the only other way to do it is just to come down to a formula, you know, which you know will always work. And I feel like there are all kinds of dangers in that.
Feature stories aren't anything new. NPR has done feature stories for years, but the first time I heard This American Life in the early 2000s, I guess, when this station here in Chattanooga started carrying it, I'd never heard anything like it because it wasn't just a feature story. It was produced like a documentary with incidental music and often no central narrator, just ordinary people telling their stories. These specific techniques, this loose conversational feel you have, where did that come from?
I mean, a lot of that came from there were other people on public radio who was doing that, specifically like when I was in my early 20s, I worked for a guy whose name isn't going to mean anything to anybody in the audience, but his name was Keith Talbot. And he was basically on staff at NPR for years to invent new ways to do radio documentaries. And he himself had a real fondness for having characters tell the stories themselves with no narration. And you know, we would do these long interviews and we would cut out the questions. It just seemed like the person was just talking. And we would put in music to make the transitions work. And all of that stuff came from me working with him. And then after I worked with him for years, all through my early 20s, then I tried to take the lessons I learned from him and move over to All Things Considered. I became a producer in All Things Considered and tried to take the techniques and tricks and the ways of thinking about radio that he did and use them in All Things Considered. And at the same time I was doing that, I think there's a few of us who kind of took those lessons very seriously. There's a guy named David Isay. There's a guy named Joe Richman. There's like hardcore public radio listeners, a group called the Kitchen Sisters. Like there were like a bunch of us who went in, and This American Life just happens to be the very most visible version of it. Like you'll hear those other people from time to time on All Things Considered. Like StoryCorps, like is done by one of those people. Like I think a lot of people hear that on Morning Edition.
Yes.
And I think like, you know, This American Life is just such a visible example of it because we're on every single week that it seems like we invented it or something, but we definitely did not.
Back in 1995, when the show first started there in Chicago, how did you convince your bosses to let you do an hour every week of just these interesting stories that really didn't have any kind of a news hook to them?
I mean, WBEZ in Chicago was looking to make a national show. Like they wanted to make a national show, and they and Tori Malatia, my current boss, who I make fun of at the end of the show each week, you know, he's actually a very ambitious and capable person, and he's like, we should create something new, something different, and have you got any ideas? And I had this idea to basically do a show of these kinds of stories that I liked when I heard on the radio that were more emotional and looser in the feeling. And he liked that. Before I did this for WBEZ, I had done a local show with a friend on Friday nights, an hour a week. A local show that deserved to always stay local. Like it was, you know, wild, varied in quality from week to week a lot. But it was a very fun show. And so Tori knew me, and he knew my work on the radio network. I was a reporter for NPR as my day job, and I had been a producer on All Things Considered in Morning Edition, And I said, you know, like what it's going to be is going to be journalism, but applying the tools of journalism to everyday life, and so you know, BEZ, you know, just trusted me, like that, you know, like I was at that point pretty experienced, and I had been on their air for 5 years, and Tori and I saw a lot of things eye to eye, And you know, the way that these things work in public radio is that you kind of have to go out and raise the money yourself. So it isn't like WBEZ was putting up capital. Like basically WBEZ and I went out looking for funding. And the thought was, well, if we can find money for it, let's do it.
You said that you kill a lot of the stories that you record. How do you explain that to the person who, you know, you went to the trouble of recording, maybe even producing the story, saying, I'm sorry, we're not going to use that after all?
Often when we do the interviews, I'll say, look, I don't know if this is going to be on the radio, but like, you know, like we, you know, we're doing a lot of interviews. I have curious about this thing. Can I just talk to you about it for an hour? Like maybe it'll end up on the air. Maybe it won't. Like sometimes I'll preface the whole thing with that, so they know kind of going into it. And then sometimes, you know, it's hard to tell people sometimes, you know, sometimes like, you know, we go into the interview pretty sure that it will go on the radio and then we kill it. And then we just have to kind of say, like, this didn't work out. Like, there's no easy way to do that.
The show, it's moved somewhat from the just quirky human interest stories to stories like The Big Pool of Money, where you explain the logic behind the financial crisis, more news explainer stories like that. Why did you decide to move in that direction?
We moved in that direction because the staff was interested in that. Like as a staff, like we became very interested in the news at some point. And then it was really hard to figure out ways to explain the news that would be in our style with scenes and characters and funny moments and emotional moments. And, you know, like it was just harder. And then there were things in the world that we didn't understand that we wanted to go out and report on. And so just the whole show shifted. I mean, I think a good radio show, like anything that's good, is basically just a vehicle for the interests of the people who are making it. And fortunately, our format is loose enough that we could just kind of shift as our interests shifted.
Yeah.
You know, like you want the people who are making the thing to be truly excited about, like, I really, really want to know this thing, because that'll just lead to whatever's going to be most interesting on the air.
So is that kind of the bottom line for you? It's not so much about trying to fulfill a specific idea of a format. It's more just what's interesting and exciting to you all?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like there's some civic mindedness in there too. You know, like there's certain things where we feel like, well, nobody's really explaining this. Like, we know as news consumers, and so, well, kind of as a public service, we're going to try to figure this out so we can explain it. You know, like we definitely do that. But there's a selfishness in that too, of like, well, we don't understand it, so we guess nobody else does. And so there's like a kind of a mission-y side and a kind of like a utterly selfish side that hopefully walk hand in hand.
Could I do a little bit of This American Life trivia with you, ask you a few trivia questions about the show?
I am surely going to fail this, but sure.
I'll start out with an easy one. What was the show's original name?
Oh, it was first called Your Radio Playhouse, and it was sort of an homage to Pee-wee's Playhouse and to sort of old-time radio. And then we weren't even in national distribution, and we were just the plan was we would do our show locally for 6 months and work out the bugs and then go national. And the head of the public radio station in Los Angeles heard some tapes of it and said, oh, like, I'll put you on in Los Angeles right now. Like, I don't want to wait for national distribution, but you got to change the name. The name's terrible.
In episode one, what actor did your mother say that you resembled?
Hugh Grant. Which is crazy, really, really crazy. If people come to this talk I'm giving, they will see there's no, like, I resemble Hugh Grant in that we're both men.
What is the total length of all the This American Life episodes right now if played back to back?
I mean, it's like 490 something. Like, we're on episode 490 something.
I worked it out. It was about 20 days plus a few hours.
Wow.
How many episodes of This American Life actually mention the city of Chattanooga?
I don't know if any do. Do
two,
any?
Two. There's the There's the one episode where Sarah Vowell goes to Chattanooga. She actually stays at the Choo Choo.
The phrase Choo Choo is completely addictive. We try to work it into every sentence. What should we do for dinner? Stay here at the Choo Choo? We end up going out for barbecue saying, this is good, but I can't wait to get back to the Choo Choo.
She's following the Trail of Tears. And there's another episode that just mentions the word Chattanooga in passing.
Okay.
The Trail of Tears one, though, yeah, you actually had Sarah Vowell here. Tell me a little bit about that episode.
I mean, that episode is funny. That episode was a total turning point for her. I don't know if people know her work so well because she hasn't been on the radio so much because she's been off writing books and going on television. But Sarah was somebody who was contributing to the radio show all the time and doing personal stories. And then she had a story she wanted to tell. She's part Cherokee. She had a story she wanted to tell about her relatives, you know, her great, I guess, great something, whatever, grandparents, walking the Trail of Tears. And so with her sister, she retraces the Trail of Tears that the Cherokees walked from their native land to where they were eventually resettled out west. And so she and her sister drove the Trail of Tears and came through Chattanooga along the way. She has since said that trip completely changed everything for her and made her shift from being a more traditional journalist to somebody writing history. She just found that writing history in a way that would be fun to read or fun to listen to just turned out to be enormously satisfying for her. So she's written a number of pretty great books. Most recent one's a history of Hawaii. She's writing one now about Lafayette. She did a great book about presidential assassinations. And so that became her mission, actually, when she did that story.
When you think about the future of This American Life, do you have a specific endpoint in mind? Do you know, like, how many more episodes you want to do, or is it just going to keep going?
I mean, it's funny. There was a point, like, 5 or 6 years in where we wondered, is this a show that actually, you know, really we can run through every idea it can ever do in, like, 7 or 8 years? But then, like, I don't know, we got new staff members and we just shifted the focus more to the news and honestly, like, now it feels like there is no shortage of things to do, and it also feels like like every 3 months, I feel like we're doing something we have never done before or heard of anyone doing before. You know, we just did this two-part story, two-episode story, where we sent three reporters into this high school for 5 months, this high school that had had 29 shootings last year, 8 deaths. And I feel like, and that came right on the heels of an episode where somebody did an investigation into whether pork bung, pork rectum, was being sliced and used as calamari, imitation calamari.
And you actually ate some.
Yeah, well, I didn't personally, but staff people did, which you know came on the heels of, you know, a year ago we found the one of the original recipes for Coca-Cola, and we made a batch which came on the, you know, like I feel like every few months, you know, we did a show, a cinema event where that we had dancers and animation, and we put out a movie, and it just seems like for whatever reason it feels like things are going good, and it feels like there's a lot to do all the time that we've never done.
When Car Talk ended, you know, it was because the Tappet brothers retired. When you're finally ready to retire, do you think you would just end the show? The show has to die with you, so to speak, or would you hand it over to somebody else?
I mean, you know, if the staff wanted to keep doing the show and if stations wanted to keep running it, I would be happy for somebody else to do it. In fact, Sarah Koenig, one of our producers, filled in like 3 weeks ago. And did such a great job. She did the show on Coincidences.
Yes.
That was so amazingly beautiful. It was her second time filling in as host. That I really felt like I'm completely obsolete. Like they really don't need me around here. She could host the show just as well as I could. There's no reason for me to continue in the job. And you know, it's funny. We never really had guest hosts before. The last 2 or 3 years, but I felt like I was needing time to report. Like I wanted to get out of the office and do reporting. And so the way that I was able to carve out the time, it's just enormously time consuming to actually like do all the pieces and all the writing and all the editing you have to do to actually host the show. So to get enough time to actually just do more reporting myself. Well, you know, we had people fill in. And I feel like the first couple of times it went well. Those were very solid shows, but this one was just like masterful. This one was just so, she's so relaxed in the job. And so I feel like, no, she could host it. I'm sure there are other people who could host it.
When you visit here April 7th and you give your talk at the Tivoli, I'm really hoping that gets people in Chattanooga excited about telling stories, telling radio stories. And I know you get so many submissions, you can't even remotely use all the ones you get, but here on Around and About, we feature those kind of stories. Could you encourage people right now to send me some stories, people who live here in the Chattanooga area?
Sure. I mean, if you had the feeling that I've had and that you've had, if you're listening and you've had this feeling of like, oh, I'd like to do one of those, like I would strongly encourage you to try. The tech is super easy to learn and it's fun to make something for the radio. Like it's easier than you would think. So I would absolutely, you know, encourage you to try it out. And, you know, I feel like, you know, one of the ways is to get a story on this show. If you go to our website at thisamericanlife.org, we have a page, which is just like a million links and things to where you can download free editing software. And we put out a comic book saying, you know, with all sort of step-by-step advice on how to make this stuff and links to things on the web that are helpful and where to buy super cheap gear. Like you could be making professional sounding radio stories using only the technology on your smartphone now, and they would sound just great. And so you know, the water's warm, the time's never been better, and it's fun to do.
One thing I've never heard on This American Life, even though you talk about characters and scenes and plot all the time, I've never heard you all do an actual old-time radio drama. Do you think that's something you'd ever do?
I it's funny, I've produced radio dramas in the past. And I'm not so fond of them. Like,
really?
I'm not so fond of them. I feel like they have a very creaky sound to me. Yeah, there was one time we did one. It's very early on. There's no reason that anybody would remember this. But David Sedaris wrote a radio drama in rhymed couplets. And it's about animal court. It's about animals animals putting each other on trial. And it's good. It's really good. But having done it made me feel like I never want to do that again. Like when I was in All Things Considered, sometimes they would put on a Christmas. This is years ago. We would put on like a little Christmas play using all the All Things Considered contributors, and we put it on the air. And I produced two of those. And I don't know, like radio drama. I don't know. Like I feel like everybody's got the thing that they want to do, and it's not mine.
you'll be here on April 7th. We are really looking forward to seeing you. Your talk is called Reinventing Radio. Could you just tell us a little bit about it very quickly?
Sure. I mean, I stand on stage with an iPad so I can play like quotes and music, and basically I can recreate the sound of our radio show around me as I talk. And what I do is I talk about why we're making the radio show the way we do, and why make a radio show that's so different from most other things that are on the air, and how we make it. And it's in large part an excuse to play a lot of very funny clips from the show and moving clips from the show from the last few years.
I've got a million questions I would like to ask you, but I know you're very busy, so I'm just going to go ahead and let you go. But thank you so much for talking with us. We're really looking forward to seeing you here in Chattanooga.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, I'm just going to stop recording now.
And hold on.
That was Ira Glass, host and creator of the public radio show This American Life. You can hear This American Life here on WUTC 88.1 FM, Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Ira Glass is going to actually be here in Chattanooga. He's coming April 7th for the George T. Hunter Lecture Series. He'll be at the Tivoli. Again, it's on April 7th at 4 p.m. The Hunter Lecture Series is sponsored by the Benwood Foundation in partnership with the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. The event with Ira Glass is free and open to the public. More information is at benwood.org. That's benwood.org. You're listening to A Roundabout Chattanooga. I'm Michael Edward Miller. That's it for our show today. Thank you all for listening. Most of the music that you've heard is from Ben Von Wildenhaus and is distributed under a Creative Commons license. It's from a music project called Instrumental Quaalude. If you have any questions, comments, or story ideas, you can reach us at 423-425-2224.